Hello and welcome to another episode of the Construction Corner Podcast. I'm Dylan. I'm your host, joined this week by my blue collar badass, Matt. How's it going, man?
Things are great, Dylan. I was just kind of shooting the shit before we turned on here. Just got back from vacation a few days ago. You had some exciting times in the last week and a half also. So looking forward to kind of jumping into that. But yeah, man, things are good. How about yourself?
Yeah, I think I'm finally recovered physically, mentally from my race. So that's how I'm doing. It's taken. So as of this recording, we're 12 days out from me getting as far as I could in my 100-mile race, made it 88 miles, took 27 and a half hours to do that. And for context, it took me 6 hours to travel the last 15 miles. Like, that's just how slow I was moving, to whatever that amounts to, 2.25 miles an hour for the last, 15 miles, which is, so I finished it, got stopped at 9:30 in the morning, which there was no way like I was going to make the next 12, right? It would have taken me another 6+ hours to do that. just wasn't in the cards. So I finished at 9:30 a.m. And so that last 6 hours was, from 3 in the morning till 9:30. And so for reference, this race I did in Page, Arizona, which is in the northern part of Arizona. It's not even an hour probably from the Utah border. It's where Antelope Canyon is, Horseshoe Bend, like that whole area on, I guess, I forget what the name of the lake is there, but anyway, big kind of recreation area. The Navajo own a lot of the land around the city, and there's like a big dam there that was built to basically, it cut, I think, like a day out of travel from one side to the other. The dam itself, I think top to bottom is 700 feet. A vertical span, and then like most of that lake sits on, or the riverway, which is the Colorado River, is like 400 or 500 feet of water. Like, it's insane. And then there's, wow, another, so lake level, lake depth is whatever, 400 or 500 feet, and then again 700 and something, 750 feet of dam. So then you have another 300 feet of like sheer rock face in this canyon. So we ran around there for 27 and a half hours. Basically the first little bit, you go out, you could run through Horseshoe, or not Horseshoe, but Antelope Canyon. So those slot canyons that are all red and you see the pictures of, we went through there at sunrise basically, and through those slot canyons, and then out through the desert a little bit, and then did a big out around through the desert, like a 13-mile stretch overlooking basically Horseshoe Bend in there and like the Colorado River. You kind of ran on the edge, super rocky, not great footing, and then you kind of skirt like these cliff faces in certain points to like get across. And this one woman that I came across in that section of race was what'd she say, like height scared or height frayed or something like that, scared of heights. And, but she said it like really weirdly, like a phrase that I'd never heard, but I got her meaning.
Yeah.
And she's like sitting there freaked out, as she's trying to skirt along this edge to, keep going on the trail. And I'm like, look, lady, can I just like run past you here? Cause I don't need you to pull me like off this cliff, cause you're like so freaking scared. And like I said, it's like a 300-400 foot vertical, drop to the next till you hit something. So whether that be a rock or the river. And then for the last 60 miles or so, we basically run on this same 10-mile loop around the town of Page. And we do it washing machine style. So you go basically 10 miles one way, and then you go back the other way for that 10 miles. And then there's two aid stations in there, roughly every 5 miles. So did that, met some kind of cool people along the way. There was one kid I say that he just turned his 21st birthday was on Sunday of the race. So he started Saturday morning at 6 a.m. Sunday was his birthday for his 21st. And he only did the race and running 100 miles because he'd already climbed Denali. And then his climbing partner got injured because he was going to do it again. But his mountaineering partner got hurt, which don't blame him, wanting to not do something like that without a buddy. So he dragged along to another buddy who was 20, and they ran this race for the most part together. Made it further than I did. I don't know if they finished or not, but made it further than I did. Then there was one guy in his 50s who ran 100 mile or the weekend before, was out there trucking along. He probably finished after me, and some other guys that were out there, they're doing it. Through this race, I fell asleep twice. So at the 3 a.m. mark, and this was on my feet. So like I never stopped moving. I just, you know, took a nap on my feet for 15 to 20 minutes, two times, one around the probably 3:30 a.m. mark, and then another around the like 5 a.m. mark, somewhere in there. And just, you know, like couldn't force myself to stay awake. So like I knew I was going in and out, but I kept walking. And, you know, like 15 minutes later, my body had enough of a recharge apparently. And like I was mentally like back. So it's really weird when that happens.
Yeah, hold on. Let's stay there because this is interesting as hell to me. So wow. So you started at like 6 a.m. Is that what you said?
Yeah, so I was up at like 4:40, something like that. Oh, and I finished 75 hard. So day, you know, the first 20 or 18 hours of the race was, you know, 75 hard. Day 75 for me.
Well, congrats on finishing 75 hard, especially in that sort of fashion. That's taking it to a whole new level, man. I got a lot of questions, but I got to go back to the most recent thing you said. So you fell asleep twice. Did you fall down? Like, do you collapse or like, are you standing still like a giraffe?
No, like I kept moving through the whole, like that whole ordeal. So like I kept walking the entire time. I just like, so luckily I'd done this before. And when I did the 24-hour rite of passage course with Chad Wright and 307, so I'd fallen asleep on my feet before. And in that environment, like I had, you know, a dozen guys with me to kind of like backstop it, if you will. But in that same thing, like just kept walking and like, you're just like, you fall asleep, but it's, I'm aware that I'm falling asleep and you can't stop it. Like there's no way to, like, I'm trying to force myself to stay awake and there's no way to do it, but I keep forcing my, like, at least eyes open and everything. And I continue to walk, but like, you can just feel your body shuts down. So like, instead of my eyes being fully open, it'd be like partial, you know, and then like you force yourself back. So maybe it's hard to say like how out I was, you know, every minute or whatever, but basically like I just like my mind would shut down for, I don't know how long, and then it would come back and then it would shut, like for 15 minutes, you're just out of it. 15, 20 minutes, give or take. Like I wasn't paying full attention to my watch at that point, but
wow.
You know, and it's freezing. So this is Northern Arizona. You're at 4,500 feet. It's 32 degrees without wind chill, and you're in open desert. So, I mean, it's windy.
Was it snowy?
No snow. I mean, you could see it at, like in the distance on the mountains, but like again, it's freezing literally. And I put on pants at like 3 a.m. over my shorts and stuff. I had a long sleeve and two thermals on, plus hat and gloves. Like, and then I was finally like warm.
Are you wearing like a full on backpack for this?
Camelback. So like I just carried, you know, 1.5 liters, 2 liters of water with me.
Okay. So you said the aid stations are roughly every 5 miles. Are you stopping every single time?
So like my parents and wife were there. So what we would do is like I'd come into an aid station, I'd swap out my bladder. So like one of them would change out my bladder with all my electrolytes and everything in my water, give me food, I'd take a sip of an energy drink, that kind of thing, and then like keep going. So I sat down twice, once to clean out my shoes, sand and change socks and that stuff. And then the second was to put on pants, at 3 in the morning, but never sat down outside of that, and really just kept moving the whole time.
Man, that's incredible. Congrats for making it as far as you did. I know you wanted to hit the end all, but that's much like 75 hard. You've done now numerous times what most people will never ever even contemplate trying. That's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, it's really hard for me in like this, because while talking to folks about it is much like you're saying, it's like unfathomable, right? The distance, the time on feet, it was 27 and a half hours out there is what I was out there for, plus, the hour and a little bit that I was up before. I was reading my 10 pages on my phone right before the start gun. I got all my food and water, like, and like I ate, and this is the thing, like, for race day, like I'm eating high calorie, like sugary foods, but that's what I have to eat in that environment for that day to succeed, right? Or have any chance of it. So it's not like I'm eating, I mean like oatmeal cream pies, not steak and rice, right? Just you can't
Sure.
digest it in that time period. So like it was kind of weird too in that aspect for 75 hard, because like what I need to eat on race day in that diet is going to be much different than like what the diet is for, the rest of my days, right? I need high calorie, like high intensity stuff, because I'm burning so much out there. But in talking to people, they're like, oh my God, how can you be on your feet for 27 and a half hours, let alone, going 88 miles? And yet I'm still thinking like, man, I've fallen so short. It might look like 12% left to go, right? 100 miles minus 88, but it's like it's more than that. Like I have so much more left to do. Like if I move faster and got through the first 60 miles, half a mile an hour faster, that would have been like significant time-wise, for the rest of this. So it's, like I've got to shave hours off of my times in order to achieve it, So it's like the delta doesn't look small, but in reality, it's quite big to get that goal. So it's, making minor adjustments in training that are going to have, tremendous impact for the rest of it. And this translates so much. Like it's, more strength work, more like lower and slower, low heart rate, slower stuff, just to build like better base endurance, but that'll have tremendous impact on the other side. So it's like hard for me to accept accolades in this, even though like I know it is a big thing, because it's still not, a completion of the goal. So like I have a hard time with that, because it's so far out of the realm of what people want. But I think the way this translates too is like for those of us out here, is like looking at the guy that's got a $100 million construction firm, or multi-$100 million, or whatever you're like, oh my gosh, how crazy is that? It's like, well, also, how long's the guy been doing this, right? I've been at this for over a decade, like in distance sport. Like, so I think in a lot of this, it's also understanding like where you are relative to them, as well as like, look, it takes a while to get here, and you can make this translation. I did this physically, but you can make this translation in, any business and pretty much anything else you want to.
Well, and it's the entrepreneur's curse, right? I mean, you're a great example of that. So you're shooting for your 100 miles. You're gonna get it. One of these times you're gonna get it, and you'll celebrate. You'll have your 24 hours in the sun, and then you'll wake up the next morning and be like, "All right, F it. Now I'm gonna do 150, or now I'm gonna do 200." And it's the same with the company, right? We're shooting revenue goals and we're hitting them, and it's like you barely even recognize you hit those goals because you're already moving on to the next one. And you have to act like that. You have to be like that. But I don't know. I'm not blowing smoke up your ass, but the 88 miles, you know, over a day on your feet is, I don't understand it. Right. It's like me trying to explain how to run a construction company to a dentist. You know, they won't have any idea what I'm talking about. So regardless of whether you made your overall goal, I do think it's pretty damn cool, man.
Yeah. And I'm more impressed with the 27 and a half hours, honestly. Like, I'm more stoked about that than I am the distance covered.
So when's the next race?
We'll find one. I mean, I've got like a 50K, so like a 32 miler, 31 miler scheduled for July, mainly because that's a buddy's first one. So we'll do that to pull him through the race. So that's like, I think, 18 weeks out. But I'll find something to do, or we'll knock it off this year at some point.
So we're going to talk about leadership today for a minute, but I want to keep kind of tying this back to your story. So how did you figure out how to do all this? Like, how did you determine what training was required? You know, you mentioned a very specific diet, or at least a very specific swap of your dietary intake to fuel your body. Like, is this self-taught? Did you have a mentor through this? Did you hire a coach? Like, how do you come about even, 'cause it, listen, guys, it's not like deciding you want to run a 5K, right? You can wake up hungover and go belt out a 5K and you don't even have to think about it. This is a significant undertaking that you don't just wake up on a Tuesday and say, fuck it, on Saturday I'm running 100 miles. Like, what, where did you get this knowledge base that you have to even begin to train and to get where you need to go here?
Yeah, so those are a couple good things to point out first is like, so with any distance, you have increasing like barriers, right? And the same analogy can be applied to business. So build a $100 million construction company, engineering firm, you can't do overnight, right? To win a $5,000 or $10,000 project, you can do in a reasonable, like short period of time, right? Construction engineering, like I think that's pretty reasonable. So that's effectively what we're trying to tie this to here is, like small dollars in construction versus, small mileages in a race. And so like a 5K, a 10K, a half marathon, even like you can walk a marathon, right? Like you have to have some mental capacity to do that, but like, you can for sure hike a half marathon. Like it might take you, again, if you're moving like 2 miles an hour, it'll take you 6 hours to do. But it's like very doable, right? To travel that distance in that time. And if you move 3 miles an hour, like you can do a marathon in a little over 8 hours, right? Like it's not that fast, but you can do it and it's very achievable within a day. So when we talk about these distances, like you can suffer through a marathon pretty easily. Like you just can. Then when you get into, a 50 miler, so the time cutoffs are 14 hours. So you're going to start at, 6 and then you'll end at 8 p.m., right? That's like the time cutoffs through there. So on the whole, you're going to end in daylight for the most part, right? So it's going to be a day race, so long as you're doing it in the summer months where you have 14 hours of daylight, right? Or you just start a little bit before the sun rises and you're going to finish in daylight. With that, like, so that's the next kind of like deal is you're going to take full daylight hours to do a race. And in that, like, again, you can suffer pretty well. And especially if it's flat and if it's not mountainous, like you can go pretty well through that. And, your nutrition can be absolute shit for a marathon and below. Like you can eat whatever, you cannot eat. Like it'll somewhat affect your ability to go, but again, you can suffer and like suck through it. At 50 miles, nutrition really starts to matter. And this is for like just finishing the race. I'm not talking about like the elite guys on the high end, like, those guys are a different breed. And again, their body's so conditioned to running, like they're doing marathons in 2 hours. You can pretty much be like anaerobic for that. You don't really need many calories and you're going to be just fine, right? They need enough to sustain them at a high end to not like bonk, but it's not going to have any effect on them completing the race or not. So nutrition really starts to have an effect at 50 miles, right? Like you need to have an electrolyte for sweat loss and things like that. You need to have some calories in. There are guys that have run like that distance or 100 milers without calories. Again, very different breed of person to do that. So then when you go to a 100 miler, you have now you have like compounding effects against you, which is why it's been so difficult for me to achieve this. One, I've chosen difficult races, like the one I did in Page, 6,600 feet up and down, right? So elevation is something for that. The other races that I've done had more elevation in them. And again, that's just, it's brutal. Like elevation adds so much to it. Now you have leg strength that you need to have. You have flexibility, so your hamstrings and hip flexors don't tighten up on you. Your calves don't. Like, now you need muscle strength. Now you need dexterity. Now you need nutrition. Now you need hydration. Then when you hit 100 miles, you're also going through a day-night cycle. So can you withstand the dark? Can you withstand being alone? Can you be on your feet for 24 plus hours, right? Do you have crew? Now, you know, do you have a pacer, somebody to be out there on the course with you to keep you like company basically for that and keep your mind occupied during those, you know, midnight to 6 a.m., right? Till basically from midnight to daybreak. And so, like, you're in the dark.
I'm going to jump in because I want to hold. Do you have somebody with you during this, or are you by yourself?
Yeah. So like for me, I didn't have a pacer or anything. Like I had crew that I saw every 5 miles and then other guys that are out on the course. So that for me, that 3 a.m. to basically daylight, it was me, you know, like there was nobody around.
But you said you're basically running a loop, right? Like, you know, different directions, but basically a loop. So are you constantly like passing people or being passed by people or?
So 75 people started the 100 mile.
Oh, wow. I figured it was like 12 times that.
No. So there was 1500 people that signed. So in Page for this event, so it's a vacation race. There was like 1,000 people that signed up for the, this is also like the numbers to show you what people do. 1,000 people signed up for the half marathon. The 55K was like 400 and then another like 300 for the 50 miler. And then 75 of us showed up for the 100 miler.
Wow.
And by, you know, midnight, say that like 30 people probably already quit, right? So then at that point you had 40 people out on the course.
Yeah.
The first guy finished at 20 hours, 20 and change. So by 2 a.m., like he'd already finished, you know, the first woman finished at 21 or 22 hours, maybe. So the top people, like I'm not going to see, right? They're on past that. So like, you know, I think maybe 25 people finished this deal, wow. You know, like, I mean, so again, like in that probably 4 hours, I didn't see anybody.
Do you listen to music or anything? Or are you just like you and your thoughts? And I know we're not going to spend the whole episode on your race, I know, but this is intriguing to me.
Yeah. So at that point, I dropped my phone. So I didn't have my phone on me anymore.
Oh, shit. You lost it?
Yeah. Like, luckily, somebody turned it in and whatnot. But like, so for a chunk, like, I did listen to podcasts and whatnot. And then, yeah, for this, like, midnight to 6 a.m., I didn't have my phone with me.
Wow.
So. Yeah, it was literally me and my thoughts. Not that it would have mattered. Like, I was falling asleep for a chunk of that. And then it's just like, you know, I couldn't run. And even when the sun came up, like, I tried to run. And it's like, my heart rate is such that it's, you know, my heart rate was whatever, 110, which is normal. Like, that's pretty low for doing exercise. Just the rest of me, like, wasn't having it. You know, my lungs, after breathing cold air all night, wasn't having it. Like, I felt what should have been like an easy cadence, right? Like at 4 or 5 miles an hour was like just physically like debilitating to me. So it wasn't like that my heart rate was up or elevated. It was just like the rest of me couldn't do it. Couldn't go more than a walk. Like I could keep moving, but that was it, you know?
Do you wear any sort of wearable, like a Garmin or a Whoop or anything to like check this all out after the fact?
I did, yeah. And so it died and I still haven't pulled everything out, like, you know, 12 days later. But yeah, for the last, I know the last 15 miles, because my parents recharged it because it died at like 78. So there's like 5 miles that I don't have. But the last 15 took me like 6 hours right on the dot to complete.
All right, last question, and then we can move into the topic that we want to talk about. But what does the recovery look like? Because I know I talked to you a day after, 2 days after, and you via text, you said you're pretty broken physically. So I got to imagine that among the mental side, you know, a side effects of it, it's got to wreck you physically for a while, right?
Yeah. So for me on this like race recovery, like staying up that late, like, man, I'm a guy that gets 8 hours of sleep. Like I just am. And so when going in without sleep for that long, and then like, basically I crashed, like I was asleep by 10 AM, woke up at like 4, and then was still like, you know, we ate dinner and stuff, back in bed by like 9, another like full night of sleep. It took a while to recover, like just mentally from being up and operating like that. Like I could do stuff, but you kind of know when you're not at your peak mental like output. That was me for the last like 10 days. Like I could do stuff, I'm operating, like it's fine, I'm good, but I was nowhere near like peak mental output. So brain fog had been a real thing for that. And then physically, I was just more sore than anything. Like my knees were a little sore. I didn't have like too many foot problems. Like I kicked a bunch of rocks, so like one of my toenails was messed up and stuff like that. But it's just like this, in being like the broken physically, it's more just like this, like kind of slow bleed, long tail soreness, right? Like you can't overcome it. And then it's like, okay, I have to do nothing, you know, like we were, cause we stayed in Vegas for, night after, or like the, so Sunday night we stayed in Page, and then Monday night we drove to Vegas, and stayed there for a night, and then flew back Tuesday. So it's like, you know, I had some drinks and ate some food, you know, good food and all that kind of stuff. And like, I walked a decent amount just to try to like keep active. But like at the same time, like this last week, I really have not gone to the gym. Like I've tried to just rest and recover, which was probably harder for me to do than like all the rest of it, to like force myself to not do anything. So recovery has been, this is probably the harder piece of it. You know, I'm ready to go, like start kind of running again, but just sore, man. Like my knees are sore from being out there for that long. But yeah, the rest of me physically is okay now. Yeah, just soreness and a long tail, like soreness.
Well, that's good to hear, man. I mean, I don't know a lot about these sort of things, but I know the human body wasn't designed to be upright, let alone in motion for that long. So like, I got to imagine like there's people that really kind of mess themselves up physically for quite a while, or suffer injuries just from the repetition, if nothing else. The rest of it, I mean, the mental side, you know, not to be crude, but it sounds like a fucking hangover without the fun of the night before.
Yeah, pretty much. And like, so actually, if you go back through history, we were meant to like move and go like super long distances.
For sure. 100 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, like the modern lifestyle is not such that we are active and move, which, you know, you see lifespans not increasing, right? Like,
right.
You know, George Washington still lived to be like 85, right? Like, we should live longer than that now, right? You'd think. So yeah, like the modern man is not meant to do it, but like our ancestors, you know, are meant to, like we walked a lot and traveled long distances, you know, like walking 100 miles was not a big deal, you know, like people did it all the time. So
for sure. But nowadays people don't do it. Ever.
Yeah. Now people are soft. So like doing these feats are big, and you don't walk consistently like 10 miles a day. So then these big efforts are super outsized for the average exercise of a common person like today.
Well, either way, man, congrats for doing it, for getting as far as you did. I told you I didn't want to talk about that for the whole time, and now I've taken up almost the whole show with talking about your race. So we got like 10 minutes. What do you want to talk about today, Dylan?
Oh man. Well, the reason like this race and doing stuff like this is so important is like, man, the thing around leadership is like, you've got to show people what can be done. And I'm really having a, I'm trying to redefine in my mind what leadership means. And the definition I continue to keep coming to is not only leading by example, like doing all the right things, showing people what can be done, making decisions, all that stuff, right? It is, can you train the person after you, your successor, to do what you do, right? And I think if we redefine leadership into making more of you, right, to multiply yourself, then what would this world look like, right? If you multiplied your abilities, your potential, like showing people what can be done. Like, I don't know how many people I've just inspired to like go and run a race by doing these outsized efforts, right? They don't have to go run 100 miles or 50 miles or a marathon, but a lot of people end up, you know, being able to believe that it can be done because, you know, an average guy like me goes and does these things. So for leadership and the way that I'm looking to kind of redefine it in a way for me, that's pretty easy to understand, is like, can you just make more of you? And if you can, then I think that that's really what qualifies somebody as a leader.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that's a good standpoint to start your journey as a leader on. I do think, and I'll push back a little bit, I think that a lot of times as leaders, we get hung up on trying to create more of ourselves and on wanting more of ourselves. And I'm speaking from personal experience, right? I mean, in what we do, you know, in the way we estimate, in the way we handle business, it's very different from most firms in the construction space. So my right hand and I are constantly kind of at battle with ourselves and with our people. Like, why can't these people just be me? Why can't they just do this the same way I fucking do it? And why can't they just pick it up and what can happen is if you get too fixated on recreating you, you lose the ability, I think, to really develop people. And what we found anyways, is once we stopped trying to replicate ourselves in every facet, we've been able to develop, to focus on developing our people way better, way quicker, and way more in depth. Now we're still taking some of the attributes of us that we have to have and really trying to push those into our people. But it went, I guess my point is, it went from a large scale, like, you're going to be me, you're going to be 100% Matt number two, to now it's like, all right, you're going to be you, but I'm going to show you like the certain things I know I do well, and I know I can transfer to you. We're going to show you those, but I want to have your flair, whoever you are, you know, your swagger, to kind of mix in there and create more of a whole institution.
That is fantastic nuance, right, around the piece of leadership, in that you've got to understand who you're trying to develop into whatever role that is, right? So you've got all your seats on the bus. Like, you driving the bus are going to have most of the attributes of every single seat that's on that bus, right? As the leader, the developer, the entrepreneur of the organization. And then in each of those seats, right, somebody, maybe you're still going to be the sales person, right? Business development guy, and you're going to be the driver and that guy, right? But over time, you'll find someone else that you teach everything that you know, but they'll be ultimately better at that single position and focused on that craft, right? So you teach everything that you know to them and your dissemination of knowledge in a specific area to get them to a point, and then they're going to take it and become more excellent than you are in that specific area. So I love that delineation and nuance around, like, yeah, you are trying to replicate you, but you're not trying to make them exactly like you in every way. And I love that, you know, kind of improvement on my way of thinking about this.
Well, you're right in what you just said too. Like, okay, I can do every job in my company. I can do every single thing in this company, at least well enough that I can survive if it was just me. I've done it, right? I've proven this. But after years and years of trying to figure out and crack this code, what I realized is like, I'm capable of a lot of things. I'm not great at all of these things. And so when I finally took my ego and tossed it out the window and said, all right, you're really not good at managing a project, Matt. Like you suck at the paperwork. You get distracted by the shiny objects. Let's go find someone with that operational mindset that is going to come in and excel in that role. And that's what I did. And then I was like, all right, well, I'm really not good at this, this, and this. So it's like everybody says, you try and hire people that are smarter and better than you. And it's really easy to talk about that. Like, and it's really easy to read that in a leadership book, but to actually then put that into practice and find people that legitimately are better than you at certain aspects. That's what I found. Like, that's true leadership to me. That's figuring it out, man. And what it's done now that we've kind of made that shift in the last 6 months to a year is it's opened up avenues to me personally where I can really focus on where I shine, right? I'm not good at all of these things. Like I said, I can do it, but I'm not great. I'm great at a very few specific things. And now we're finally getting to that point where like, I can go this way and focus on what I'm great at because I've got somebody here, somebody here, somebody here, and they're all great at their own specific things. And it's like, it's a very freeing sense to finally get that, you know, but it involves a lot of ego suppression to get to that point is what I learned. I took it the hard way, but.
Yeah, man. Well, that it's setting up the systems for those people to succeed, right? To set the framework, yes. To put everybody in that right place, and then to replicate those people out. And then it's those people in those specific positions, right? To like a project manager, for them to hire the next project manager, teach the next project manager, improve the next project manager so that they can become a senior project manager, right? And then they have a fleet of project managers under them. And then those folks train the next one, so they become senior and they beat a branch from there. And I think that just for me, it's this mindset shift of like, instead of trying to like, yes, you need to become the best you, but you also need to, if you don't impart your skill, your knowledge, your experience onto the next person, like kind of what were you here for? Like we have all this knowledge in the construction industry, especially that we're never passing on. I mean, that's what, like, if you look at the basis of a union, that was like the crux of what they're meant to do is to pass knowledge on to the next guys. Now they've become political and everything else, but like the crux and basis of them in that ability to take knowledge from a master craftsman and put it down into the lowliest apprentice off the street, like that is what we need to emulate in our own firms, our own businesses. And that's how we're going to improve the construction industry and create people that can go out and do all these great things. It'll make your business great. And then if they leave or start their own thing, like awesome, because now they have this knowledge base to go out and do good work and, you know, make a good name for the construction industry.
Absolutely, man. It's the age old saying, right? If you want to go fast, go by yourself. If you want to go far, go with your team. And it doesn't matter. Like you just nailed it. That the last bit you said is what's so crucial in this industry and in any industry. But if you really pour into people and you give them your all and you actually take the time and the effort to train them and to give them everything you got, if they decide that they want to go somewhere else, and especially if they decide they want to go start their own business, fucking A, man, that's a win, right? That is how we change this industry, because we can do a lot with our team here, but it's only when we start affecting the teams outside of our four walls that we truly see change and we truly start making this actually a better place to work and a better industry to work in. You know, turnover sucks, right? Losing good people sucks, no matter how you spin it. Losing bad people sucks. But if you know, like inside, that you've done everything for this person, now they're going to go and hopefully continue that tradition on and do the same for their new people. Enough of that happens, and pretty soon this is a fixed industry, and it's a fixed place to be, right? Rather than the broken kind of conglomerate that construction still is, frankly.
I just, for me, like changing that mindset around like not only becoming the best that you are, right? That's always first and foremost in here, but then pouring everything you have into people, and by that effect and training them and developing them, you're also like the byproducts of that are going to be, you find every single way that you can to improve in everything that you do, right? Because that person's going to be dedicated to figuring out what's better, a better way to teach, a better way to learn, a better way to do, as you go through every single role, from project manager to superintendent to engineer to carpenter. Like, it's all in the same of, we're going to make you better. And as a byproduct of that, the standards, the processes, the things that we do, the client experiences, pricing, productivity, like all of that becomes better in that same line. And so for me, it's been this mind shift of like, okay, in building a great organization, like, what do the great ones do? Well, they have a fantastic training organization. And the more and more that I like think about it, that's kind of the same line that I come to. It's what nobody does. That's why there's a lot of shit organizations out there, is because there's no training, there's no process improvement, there's no dedication to being just at the start excellent at what you do, let alone improving everybody else along the way.
Yeah, it's because so many of us came up in this trial by fire, right? Hold your feet to the flames, and you know, you get thrown out into the wolves, and you better learn to survive or you're dead. And that's how I learned. I mean, I taught myself largely everything I know how to do. And then, but it's once you have that mindset shift, like you're talking about, that you realize, okay, there's a way to do this. So like that my people, you know, my kids, my employees, my team, they don't have to suffer exactly the same way as I did. I'm not going to spoon feed shit to anybody. Like, you're going to earn it. You're going to bleed, and you're going to sweat, and you're going to grind for it, but it doesn't have to be as hard and as monotonous and as painful as what I went through to get here. And we shouldn't expect people to want that, right? Like, it's a miserable existence at times to go from zero to learning how to run a business, right? But if we can take that and shorten that time span and get rid of some of the bumps in the road, the training side is just huge. And it's actually something that we're really focusing on. We're starting to kind of develop systems. One of my rocks for the quarter that ends in a few short days here is to really implement and develop a training program kind of company-wide. And I'm way behind on my goal, but I've got great ideas on where to put it. So it's a huge task, but it's critically important, because if you can remove some of those obstacles, man, it just, people get better faster, and they get better in their own specific areas where you want them to. I don't need everybody in my company to be able to do every single thing. It's not necessary. So if they can focus on whatever their skill set is and really hone in on that specific craft, that area of their craft, we're going to be way better because of it. We'll all be better.
Yeah. And you build it up over time, right? Like, to go back to like the nutrition thing and running, like, again, you can experiment with a lot, and you have to, the only way to try stuff is you have to try it when you're that deep into a race. You know, the only way for me to see if something agrees with my stomach at 18 hours is to run for 18 hours. Like, that is the only way to see if it works. And so a lot of this stuff, like, you're going to have to experience some things and learn through that, right? There's always like, in some of the training stuff that I've done, like 3-7 project, there's always a pre mission brief. There's doing the mission, and then there's an after action, you know, debrief report after the fact. So you, hey, this is what we're going to go do. Make sure you're prepared. Here's all the gear you need to bring. Here's all the stuff for it. We go do it. And then, hey, would you learn after it? Right. And you have that cycle in every project and every week and every day of what you do, right? Like, you can have those as often as you want, or as, you know, infrequent as before and after a project.
Totally. We do the same thing here. We do postmortems. We do after action. It's one of those good meetings, right? Where even if something went wrong, like, there's a ton of benefit that can be found from sitting down with your group, with your team, and hashing out what happened. And why did it happen? And where do we go wrong? If that so be the case, it's not fun. People don't look forward to these meetings, but you know, from time to time, these things happen, and to be able to take that, spin it into a training module of its own, it's huge.
Yeah. So that's been my big, I guess, thing that I've been thinking about a lot here lately, is on leadership and how to really think about it. You know, like, we think about it and leading people, making decisions for them, but how do you help empower them to make their own decisions and become leaders themselves? It's kind of been my shift in how to think about this.
For sure, man. I'm with you. Well, hey, I know we're pushing up against time here. We spent a good part of the show talking about your race. So that was fun. It's always fun to hear about new and exciting shit that I'm not used to. So I enjoyed it. Hopefully you did, and the listeners did too. But guys, we just want to thank you again for listening, for tuning in every week. The YouTube channel is still going strong, so check us out there. Please help us continue to grow this. We're getting a lot of input lately from people wanting to be on the show, to come on as guests. We are going to get back to doing more interviews. Candidly, everybody knows I moved recently, so my actual studio is still not finished yet, which is why I'm on this shit dirtbag Amazon mic and sitting in my office. But soon enough here, we'll have actual facilities back up and running. We'll be bringing people on the show. So continue to reach out. I'm keeping all of these names on file. And then eventually here in the next few weeks, we'll start actually scheduling out some more interview shows for the next few months. So stay in tuned and keep sharing the show.
Yeah, guys. And thanks for allowing me to talk about my race. Hopefully that helped you in, you know, leadership, endurance, mental toughness, and going out and trying new things. So as always, thank you guys for listening, and until next time.